By now, you've heard me talk about Prime Zero Prep, the full-service pre-fulfillment company I personally use. I'm excited because Brendan's given me a code for $50 off the sign-up fee to see if I can bring him a few more customers. Remember, the fourth quarter's here. Now is the time to expand your business. Use a prep company that you can trust, real partner in your business. They're located in tax-free New Hampshire, and that's a big deal. You want to remember that. They can help you with OA, wholesale, private label. Oh, they can also merchant fulfill some of those last-minute orders for you around the holidays. They really are the complete pack and ship company. You need a partner you can trust, and that's PrimeZeroPrep.com. Use the code MOMENTUM, all in caps, must be in caps, and you can get $50 off, as I said. He's only going to do this for a limited time. He's only taking a few customers. Sign up now. Get premium service. Let Brendan know I sent you. Remember, use that code MOMENTUM. That's PrimeZeroPrep.com.
Welcome to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 137, Nathan Longacre from RefSeller. You know, this has been a long overdue interview for a myriad of reasons. One, we've been trying to get together. We're both really busy. Two, we were scheduled. Nathan got sick. Then I picked it up and I got sick. And then I had computer problems. And in this episode, they continue. So I have a new computer coming and it's not here yet, blah, 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 blah. So it's on its way. Interview goes great, and then it messes up in the middle. I cut that piece out as best as I could, and I think it still gives you what you need to hear, which is this is interview number two in a row where you're hearing sellers with a B plan. And I think that, you know, Greg Purdy was the episode before this, and now with Nathan, again, perfect scenario where they have multiple revenue streams, and in Nathan's case, it's eBay, Amazon, and RevSeller, and then he's leveling them up or down depending on the market conditions, and I think it's so smart. Let's get into the podcast. All right, welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, and man, it's going to happen. I mean, it's just bound to happen. This call will happen. Funny story. We've been trying to get together for months and months, and both of us schedules. And then sickness came upon us, came upon you first. And then I swear you gave it to me somehow, you know, magically. And then I got
somehow it. Multiple states away. That happened, yep.
But we did get to meet not too long ago. Right. So it's Nathan Longacre.
Yeah.
Welcome, Nathan.
We'll go with that. That's right. Yeah.
You did
pretty good. Yeah. It's different even within our family. It's pronounced differently. So you did pretty well. We say Longacre, but Longacre.
Longacre.
Yeah. Get a lot of variations
on that. I practiced
beforehand.
But it's funny. Yeah. We started recording this call and my computer went kaputz. And Skype went kaputz. Thank God we checked it because it was a really weird voice. We could have had that electronic voice. That was popular in the 80s. would have been an interesting for sure. So welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thank you.
Are Mr. RevSeller.
Yes.
Okay. So people will make the connection of who you are. Okay. So even though I know the story, I want to go back and I want to talk about how you got started, right? So let's go all the way back to high school. You know, what you were thinking you were going to do, and then what you ended up doing.
Sure. Yeah, well, I grew up in southern Indiana here in the Midwest, and I guess out of high school, I always knew I wanted to go into business in, you know, some way, shape, or form. But I didn't really know what or how. My parents were entrepreneurs, small businesses. My dad owned a construction business, and my mom did accounting, helped him in his construction business as well. And so I decided to get an undergraduate degree in business from college here in southern Indiana. And then I ended up going and getting my master's degree in biblical studies, totally different. But it was more just of a thing I wanted to do when I was younger, get a chance to do it, go ahead and do it. But I didn't really have plans to go into full-time nonprofit work.
Right.
But I ended up doing that. I ended up, after I graduated with a degree in biblical studies, worked for a nonprofit for 4 years in Dallas. I was in Texas at the time. And so I was their chief operating officer and got to practice, you know, my business experiences along with kind of the stuff that I believed in at the same time. So that was a pretty good fit at the time.
And was this a calling for you? I mean, was that where you, you were led at that point? I mean, no, it's real.
That's a great question. Absolutely. And you hear that all the time. And you know, at different times, I think I kind of like went back and forth a little bit thinking that, you know, it was a lifelong calling. And then I think over time, I just kind of gravitated towards, hey, let's just focus on what it is I feel I do best and then contribute however I can in addition to that. So I've always felt like I've been best at administration and business and all aspects of business. And so
that felt right.
Yeah. Every role I was ever in, even for the nonprofits and churches that I've been, volunteered with and everything, I always gravitated towards the business side of things, you know, helping them with their websites and helping them with just any kind of administration they needed help with, fundraising, things like that. So,
was there a particular skill set? I mean, that, you know, that was apparent early on that just continued right through the thing? I mean, I get the administrative thing, but are you that disciplined? Are you organized? Are you methodical? You know, what is it?
Yeah, so, you know, it's funny. In Nashville, we briefly mentioned the DISC test. Mm-hmm. And I am a DC, so I'm just barely a little more D than C. So the D is like the determined-driven guy that likes, you know, take risks, forge ahead, that kind of thing. But the C is very analytical and cautious. So in a way, I think that was a good combination for entrepreneurship because I'm very driven. I like to try new things. But then my analytical side, as soon as I try the new thing, I just start thinking, what could go wrong here? And I start worrying. And in a way, that's a good thing because I catch, you know, some of the things that can go wrong before they do go wrong. So.
But it's a good point. Do you then pull back? That's what holds you back? Or do you put preventative measures in place?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, hopefully I've evolved a little bit over the years. And I remember back in my master's degree days, there were some guys that I was friends with, and they kind of like gave me a hard time saying, look, man, you're too cautious. You really need to just get out there and try more things and take more risks. And they were totally right. So I probably went through a period of time where I was a little, you know, too not cautious. But I think I kind of got back to center for a little bit. And, you know, since then, I feel like I've had a pretty good balance of, okay, take a risk, but take, you know, measured risks. And I still worry. I still, you know, get anxious every time I try to do something that just totally, you know, seems like a big task. But I go ahead and do it, you know, and then I just, you know, work my way through it. So I think it's been, you know, a process for me to get to the point where I take enough risks, I would say.
Does your wife offer that balance?
Yeah, so we definitely are complementary, and that's a great point as far as that goes, because, you know, sometimes I now tend to take too many risks, I would say, as far as like, you know, always trying something new, and her personality loves stability and repeating the same things, and, you know, and that's a great compliment to me because she reins me in sometimes, so that's a good fit.
Well, it's interesting is that that's really how your business got started, your Amazon business. It really wasn't yours.
That's right.
It was hers.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. So the story there was, so she was a speech pathologist, and so she worked for the school systems, and they had the summers off. And she was hoping to just make a little extra money during the summer after, I don't know, 10, 11 years of doing speech therapy, had the summer off. And we had a cousin who had started an eBay business, and over the years he had told me about it, how it was going well. And I had mentioned to him that, hey, you know, Amazon has opened up their platform to third-party sellers now. And he wasn't aware of it at the time. And so he started selling on Amazon and it started going well for him. So fast forward to when she was looking for a job, you know, just a part-time job during the summer, maybe make $1,000 or something. She decided to give that a try, online selling. So she started it up and wasn't really, you know, we weren't really doing much as far as she was, you know, trying, but we just didn't know anything. so just trial and error. And so by the end of the summer, we were probably thinking, hey, we won't do this again, or she won't do this again. And she picked up a bottle of shampoo in a store and scanned it, and it looked like it had a profit. So she bought 5. And so we kind of felt like probably this is, you know, going to go the way the other products have gone. It's probably going to go okay, but not great. And all 5 of those bottles of shampoo sold within 24 hours. And so she went back and bought more and bought more and bought more. And I think when it was all said and done, probably within the first 6 weeks after that, she had made something like $7,000 off of that bottle of shampoo.
Oh, my God. Did a light bulb just went on.
Yeah, yeah, that was it. I was like, you know what? This might be a thing for me too here. So so I started getting involved. There were more involved. And I just really kind of took it over because she went back to work in the fall. And so I just started working at it, and the rest is history, I guess, from there. So that was like the big moment, I guess, was that one bottle of shampoo that just happened to be in a manufacturing shortage. And that was the economic reason why we were able to make money on it. They stopped making it for a period of time.
Did you understand that at the time? You know what I mean? Do you get what I'm saying? Is that did you understand that that was more than just a lucky bottle of shampoo, that this is the pattern that you could start to look for, that kind of thing?
A little bit, yeah. I didn't realize it in its entirety. I kind of thought that shortage was probably something that didn't happen very often at all at the time. So I felt, hey, we just got lucky. And so I probably didn't like pursue that specific strategy as soon as I should have in full force. But what I came to realize is that this happens all the time. I mean, products all become go into shortage and get discontinued that are super popular all the time. And I had no idea before.
You know, it's funny. I look at Rebseller when I look out there. There's a recommendation by David Hawkins. And
yeah.
David, this is his model right there. He knows he is so quick to take advantage when there is a bump in the market for whatever reason, either a shortage, a discontinued, or, you know, the inability for somebody in another part of the country to get it. He's able to take advantage of it better than most anybody else I've ever met. And it's funny to see that connection with the two of you.
Okay. Oh, David is awesome. Yeah, he's absolutely awesome at the business. Yeah.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, I want to hear a little part of the story we missed is you were actually unemployed. And so you were looking for something and this kind of found you. And I do want to expand on that a little bit more.
Sure. Yeah, right. Sounds good.
Right back.
This episode is sponsored by me. Yes, I'm sponsoring my own podcast. This is the ecommercemomentum.com is actually sponsoring it. And it's because I've been able to get the new website up. Not finished by any stretch, but I had to get it up because the player is so much better. You really want to go check out the player. It lets you do so many cool things, including Clammer. And if you don't know what Clammer is, once you try it, you will love it. You could take snippets and send them to somebody else. It's very cool. But I've also added a blog page, and I have my first post up, and they're just short thoughts that I have. I wrote 19 of them when I was on vacation, just different things that I think I'm hopefully going to provoke some thought and get you thinking about really investing in your business, because I think it's time to invest in this lifestyle business, but I want you to invest in your life. And some of these things are going to be about life. Some of these things are going to be about reducing touch points, things that, you know, are on my mind. And I talk to so many people, they're on their mind too. So I think there's some benefit there. So ecommercemomentum.com, when you sign up, you will get 25 things you can outsource in your business. I think most of them will be intuitive. There's a few there that you might say, I didn't even think I could do that, but you can. And I give you a list of different things, all free. And I just hope you sign up, because then you'll receive notifications when I do post a new blog post or when I have a new episode coming out. These episodes, you know, two a week plus some blog posts, I put out a lot of content. I really hope you enjoy it. Again, if you see somebody that you think is worth me interviewing, send me a note, private message me, and I'd love to talk with them. Ecommercemomentum.com is the sponsor. Take care.
All right, we're back, and we're talking with Nathan Longacre. Better with
the
name?
That's good. That's even better, yes,
okay,
for sure.
I'm getting there. I mean, that's a tough name. I mean,
is that
German?
It is, yeah. It's a Swiss-German, German-speaking part of Switzerland, I guess.
Because it doesn't look like it's, you would pronounce it.
Mm-hmm.
So, as
exactly.
You say, people
it means long field or long acre in German, I guess. So, yeah.
Huh. Yeah. Were they, I wonder what that meant that they did way back in the day.
Who knows? Yeah, farmers or something, yeah.
Mine's Peterson, son of Peter, right? That kind of makes sense, right?
Sure.
Anyway. Okay, so you actually were looking for a job, and I don't think we should downplay that. You were looking for something. You had already had your calling. You had some success with that, but it just wasn't what you wanted to do anymore. And
that's
you were
right.
looking for something. And I think it's so important. What I see is that you recognized something that was put in front of you. And I'm afraid a lot of people don't do that. They don't pay attention to that, you know, and you did. And you kind of seized it. Did you push for it, or did your wife push for it after the success of the shampoo?
Oh, I think it was me. I think she saw the shampoo and, you know, probably thought that would never happen again. And because she's cautious and, like I said, she's a good offset to my risk taking. But she was for my decision. She supported it and everything to try to work on this more. But she definitely didn't think, you know, wasn't real confident it was going to work out. Let's just say that.
Yeah. Did she give you a timeline? Because I've had some people on who,
Agus
is a good example. Agus is one who said to his wife, look, I could do this for 3 months. Give me 3 months or whatever it was, and I can make it work.
Yeah, I would say, well, I can't remember. It's been a while now, but I feel like there was some sort of maybe 6-month timeline. Let's just see where we are at that point. You know, so I was probably trying to do a little bit of convincing, but you know, I wasn't sure at the time either. All I knew was that was a good sign, that first product that we really did well on. So I thought, well, if I can do it on one, maybe I can do it on more. And so I just got after it.
And you were merchant fulfilling these. I think we got to make that point. This is 7,000 worth of product, means it's a lot of product. You were putting them in a box, shooting them out every day.
Yeah, the nice thing about the products we mainly work with, health and beauty, is they're really small and light. So we can store a lot of them in a small space. And then even getting them out, we've got USPS that comes to the house every day, picks up, UPS, same thing. So it's a pretty efficient system. But yeah, it's definitely not as easy as just doing all FBA for sure.
And you still merchant fulfill?
Yeah, we do. We try to maintain a little more control over certain products for various reasons, because we've found that, I don't know, maybe it's just the category we're in. Certain products seem to have more issues if they're fulfilled by Amazon. Maybe it's the packaging or whatever. I'm not sure exactly. But a small percentage, I would say, well, maybe almost half, actually. Maybe not a small percentage. Maybe almost half. We actually merchant fulfill still. Because we've got a nice little setup as far as our inventory space and everything. It's not huge or anything, but we've got it's all established and efficient. We've got a part-time guy that comes in, manages that, and you know keeps it basically perfect. So the system is there, so it's not really hard to maintain that.
Do you run in? Well, you know, that makes me think. You know, why are you seeing? Do you only sell when the FBA is not available? I mean, the buy box. You know, how's that work with you? I mean, is that, you know, are you repricing against the buy box? I mean, those are the thoughts that are going to my mind.
Yeah.
Because everybody says, wait, you got to send everything into FBA, right?
Yeah.
And that's where the buy box is going to be. Everybody wants Prime, this and that. Is it a little different in your experience?
Yeah, so as far as the products that we focus in with discontinued and shortage, it's really still supply and demand. I mean, oftentimes we're only competing with maybe two or three other sellers on the listing. So there's still a chance to get the buy box, even if there's another FBA seller there or they're about to sell out, you know, because there's not a lot of supply left. So merchant fulfill works in those scenarios where you're not competing with yet 20 FBA offers at lower prices for sure.
Okay, so it doesn't work when you have 20 FBA offers at lower prices. That doesn't work.
Yeah, I mean, I would say it works a lot less often, right?
Okay,
right.
All right. Well, I just want to make sure that we're clear because people are going to be like, wait, you mean I can just hold on to my hairspray and ship it from home and that'll make it go well? Well, no. First off, if it's aerosol, you're not sending it in FBA anyway unless you're a hazmat guy, which, you know, there are people that are hazmat approved, but I'm not. So in that scenario, you can use ground shipping to ship that, right? That's the only way to ship it. And so if it's not FBA, you would be very competitive in that way, as long as you price the shipping correctly. So it's interesting to me. I've not heard of someone had that experience, and I think it's very interesting. I, like you, ship a lot of things out, and we use standard boxes. That's how it becomes efficient. If you have standard boxes, it's simple, and if you have a decent inventory system, it's so – I mean, it literally is seconds. You're a
That's
step
right.
ahead of me. You have them pick up at your – well, I don't have a house. I have a warehouse, and so I'm not there during the day, so it wouldn't work for me. But it's still, I think, a very efficient model. What percentage of your sales – you said half of your health and beauty. I mean, what percentage of your sales would you say you're multi – or you're fulfilling yourself?
Yeah, I would say close to half, but
really?
Keep in mind, we're actually probably 30 to 40% eBay versus Amazon these days. So, we've ramped eBay up a little bit for various reasons, but so that's all merchant fulfilled. But, you know, like, you know, the other thing was we've got that guy that comes in and processes all that. So I'm not actually doing any of it, but we've got a part-time college kid that comes and does it for us.
Yeah, I sell a lot on eBay, so I'm not – I never look down on it because – lately, in some cases, I'm getting better prices, and it's just – it depends, right? It all depends. And, you know, I'm against my own repricer sometimes, and I'm like, oh, man, that's selling cheaper there, but it's my repricer that caught it. I'm like, oh.
Right.
And so I'm not paid attention. That's interesting.
Yeah.
So you're doing merchant fulfill also on Amazon, though, too?
Yeah, for sure. Okay. For sure. Yeah, and maybe it's 25 to 30% on Amazon, but overall maybe it's 40 to 50%. Of our volume is merchant fulfilled, I would say.
It also sounds smart because you're probably able to manage your inventory a lot stronger, right? So if you picked up 100 units, you might not send all 100 units in theory to Amazon for FBA because it's selling 10 a week, right? And
absolutely.
You pick up 50 or 60 on eBay, and you're immediately getting sales. So I think it's the best of both worlds.
Absolutely, yeah. And health and beauty, there are maybe three listings for the same product. There's a single, a three-pack, and a six-pack. And so if you've sent all your units in on six packs into FBA, and then that listing just tanks for whatever reason, you know, you kind of wish you had those back so you could sell in the single or the three pack. So it's much easier to switch from one to another if you don't have to send them all in at one time.
Let me ask you a tactical question. So in that example where there's a one, a three, and a six, what are you doing? Are you merchant fulfilling the one, the three, or the six? Is there a strategy that you approach that, or do you FBA them all and then also merchant fulfill them?
Yes. So
you don't have to give away a secret, but I mean,
No. I'm just trying
about that.
Yeah, no. We just really, it really depends on the product. I mean, there's not really a rule for all, you know, all products and all multi-packs. It just depends on the product. I would say one's kind of side rule that we try to live by these days, but don't always do it. But if there's a really good pack of three listing or a really good multi-pack of any sort, and then there's a single listing, we tend to go towards the multi-pack just so buyers are a little more aware of how many they're getting. You know, Amazon puts it real big up there on the image, usually, you know, pack of two, pack of three or whatever. Sometimes, you know, when it's a discontinued product and the price goes high and the buyer sees it on the single listing, you know, maybe they don't realize it's a single. You know, we try to make it as clear as possible that what we can do, but maybe they don't realize that. So that's just one little side rule that we have. But as far as a general rule, merchant fulfilled versus FBA, you know, it's just product by product.
Okay. All right. But it would also would be a higher price if you went to the three pack, so your fees would be lower as a percentage of sales.
In theory, right?
A little bit more of a hassle factor because you got to pack them together or do whatever to get them in there.
Right.
But,
right.
You know, it's interesting to me. I think it's really cool that you're one of the few that I've heard doing this. And I think lately I'm hearing more and more because people are getting restricted in certain things. Has that affected you in any way?
You know, not yet. There are some products that I've sold in the past or some brands I've sold in the past that I noticed that I'm restricted on, but I don't sell them anymore. It's been a couple of years and I only maybe sold a few of those.
Okay.
So there's nothing that probably I've sold in the last 2 years, I would say, that I'm restricted on. So no issues so far.
Okay. And so your business, I mean, do you plan on keeping it about the same as your rev seller business takes off, or is that now replacing one? I mean, do you find it going that way?
You know, that's a great question. I really enjoy the software side of things more than I probably do the product flipping side of things. So I'd like to have both going still. You know, this year we started seller in January, I think. And, you know, it took a few months for people just learning about it. And then somewhere around the summer, it kind of just started taking off. It seems, I guess maybe people heard about it. Maybe some of the improvements we made, you know, were the last feature that everybody needed. But it's definitely not something that I can just say, okay, well, I'm just going to do software. And I don't think I want to just do software still. But I can see myself, backing off of product flipping next year to focus more on software for sure. But not one or the other probably.
All right, you heard it starting to get messed up there. Well, the whole section gets messed up, and there's a real clean break, and blah, blah, blah. It didn't work. So I made it work, and the pain will go away. But I think you get the premise. Again, a scaled-up business. What you're going to find from Nathan, just like you found from Greg Purdy, is that multiple streams of income, having a B plan, having all those things together, you can raise up one as the other one declines, or as you enjoy one more than the other, or as the market changes. You know, Andy Simons will tell you quarter four is when he hates retail arb, hates it. Quarter four, different story. Hates online arb. Quarter four, different story. Because the business mandates that. It dictates that. That's when you're going to make your money. So smart sellers do that. And I think we get into that. Let's get back into the podcast.
So what I'm trying to understand, Nathan, is I get why you did it. I mean, it makes perfect sense to me. You saw you had a hassle, you know, building spreadsheets or filling in those numbers. You probably had to put in, you know, eight numbers to get it to do what you wanted to do. And
sure,
you could only do one unit at a time. And if you found a good unit, great. It was worth your time. But most units weren't, right? Most items. And so you were like, no, hassle, hassle, hassle. So you figured it out. And do you remember how much more efficient you became? What was the utility, right? The utility is that you were able to improve your process, right? And so
right.
I'm trying to understand, because I wonder if there's a, you know, a correlation there in a lot of ways, you know, to people who come up with an idea that they could see a 50% improvement or a 20% improvement. Do you remember?
Absolutely, yeah. So I can kind of give the growth statistics, and then that also leads to kind of a follow-up of what happened after that. So basically, building the tools, and it wasn't just that tool that we were using for ourselves. There were a couple of others that we software tools that we used to kind of speed up the product research tasks and everything. And we grew. Around that time, my wife decided to stop being a speech therapist. She wasn't happy there. Mm-hmm. And she, you know, looked at me and says, "Hey, you know, do you have something for me? I'd love to work with you in this business." And so we said, "Sure," and tried to make it work. And, this was, I think, in January 2015. And so we did that. And that tool, the very first edition, I guess, of RevSeller, really saved, I mean, so much time, because we started doing a lot of online arbitrage, and each product that we looked at, we just didn't have to click and type and, you know, repeat the process five times before we could actually have the information we needed. So we grew quite a bit. I want to say, you know, it's kind of hard to say, because she also came on board and started, you know, adding a lot more work hours than just
right,
me.
Right.
So but we grew significantly. Yeah. I mean, I want to say February, March, we were in the, you know, $100,000 a month sales range. And with just me doing health and beauty, it was I want to say it was half that.
Okay.
You know,
wow.
Something like that. Yeah.
So, I mean, and you were, I mean, you're processing a lot more product, right? And so.
Yeah.
Were you able to move onto online a lot faster? I mean, to me, that would be the other thing, is you're not out chasing the product. You were able to go online and just blow through website after website, right?
Yeah, for sure. Online arbitrage is just a lot faster when you have this this tool that pops up at the top of your Amazon page and tells you the net proceeds or net profit if you put a number in, sales rank at the top of the page. Yeah, it definitely goes faster. But I think overall our process has just improved dramatically by just having a second person there to look at what you're doing and just split up the task with who does what best. And overall, yeah, we just we kept working at it and kept getting better. But then sometime around March or April, Amazon started, I don't know if you remember this or if this impacted you, but Amazon started kind of cracking down different performance metrics that maybe they didn't tell anyone about.
Right, yep.
And so we started seeing all these people in the group saying, "Hey, I got this flag for this, I got this flag for that." And sometime we got a flag for a feedback. I think the buyer said it didn't look exactly like he thought it was going to look. And so we got a flag for that. So we disputed it, and we were able to sell that product again. But then shortly after that, we got two or three more flags, and we're like, what is going on here? So what I think happened is our volume increased, and we were still doing a pretty good job, I think, as far as staying on top of everything, as far as quality. But for the volume, we're doing a good job for the volume, but I think Amazon Performance didn't really care about our volume. They cared about, did you have three orders that you sent the wrong product for to the buyer? Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't matter if you sold $100,000 necessarily, but did, you know, it was more of a bulk number. So we got a little concerned about, you know, the like a lot of Amazon sellers do, about the stability of the account. So at that time, we pulled everything back as far as we pulled back some online arbitrage, and we decided we're not going to do nearly as much volume as we were doing, but just focus on the most profitable products that we can find.
That's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably was probably a very healthy move, because you could run and run and run just to sell, "Oh, I'm in the store, or I'm getting this. Oh, yeah, well, I'll make a dollar on it, but I'm doing it anyway." What's the big – you start to rationalize.
Exactly, yeah. And we didn't really enjoy packing up FBA boxes. And we're like, "Hey, it's okay for a period of time." And some people love it, you know, and that's their thing. We just – maybe it's because we weren't as good at it as some of these other people. So we just felt like, "Hey, this is maybe not the way we can best contribute and best use our skills in this industry." So we decided to pull back. Let's just focus on the stuff that we do best, which is probably product research overall. We're really good at finding profitable products, but as far as like processing, you know, 20 boxes per hour for FBA, that's not our forte.
A DNC would not be a good fit for that, just so you know.
My wife is a good fit, but even she didn't like it, but she's right. A good fit. She's, I think, SC, but DNC, you're exactly right.
So you're evolving, and at that point, were you 50-50, 50 FBA and 50 merchant fulfill?
We went through cycles, so okay. I'm going to totally miss the timing of it, but at one time, we were like 90% FBA. At one time, we were 90% MFN. And that kind of went up and down with what we thought was going on with the Amazon policy issues or performance issues during those different years. Like a couple of years before that, there was the big there was the big Tenasorb ingredients crackdown, where, you know, if you had a certain ingredient. So we had our VA going through every product that we sold and every ingredient, trying to make sure we didn't sell any of that stuff. And so at during those times, especially, we were pulling everything back for MFN. And so different issues cause us to kind of go back and forth between FDA and MFN.
Wow. You know, I wonder, I mean, looking back, right, and you got to look honestly back, would you say that the mistakes, those three out of, you know, 2,000 orders, were they MF or were they FBA, or can you not tell? You don't.
Yeah, one of them was FBA for sure. I remember that. Mm-hmm. And then I think the other two were MF. And, you know, it's just stuff that happens. It's human error. And,
right.
Of course, you know,
I've done
in
it.
Volume.
Don't get me wrong. I've done
yeah.
it.
Yeah. I think it was bad timing for us, too, because we were ramping up our volume right at the time Amazon changed some of that policy, or something changed on their back end, clearly, because it wasn't just us. And that summer, I think multiple sellers were suspended for various reasons, got back in. So that was great. But
we
lost a little bit of confidence.
I think it's smart. And I think the fact that you figured that out and you tempered back the business and scaled back, are you making as much money as you were making when your sales were higher?
Yeah, I would say so. That's what we really try to focus on, is like what's the net. And I guess the second thing we do make the trade sometimes where we're saying we're not going to like try to get that extra 5 or 10% of profit for the year if it means, you know, working all weekend long for an extra 4 weekends or something like that. We'll make those time for money trades every once in a while. But net, that is our goal, to really keep making the same amount of money. And lately, it's more just diversifying. So
right,
we love Amazon, we love eBay, and now we have Reseller. We love that product as well. And you know, we keep looking at more ways to diversify.
Well, I just love it. I think it's so smart. Your business, you're maturing in your business. I'm not sure your business is maturing. Your business model is maturing for sure, but you're maturing. And to me,
yeah,
that's a very,
for sure,
very smart thing. And I hope more people hear that. I had an interview that came out with Greg Purdy, who talks about multiple lines, but he's really leveled up his multiple lines. I mean, each one of them, he's kind of, you know, leveling them up. And I think that's just such a smart way to look at life, because life has to have an important in this lifestyle business that we talk about. Okay, so let's talk RevSeller, because
sure,
I dig it. I love it. It's so cool when that little graph comes up there. It's like, oh, my God, right there.
Yep.
It's instant knowledge. So let's talk about it. So the features that are here, and this is the current version that's out there, and I'm going to RevSeller.com, and he gave us a deal, and so you're going to get the lowest price that you can buy it for, it, which is so cool, so stay tuned for that. But I think it's cool. But you go to RevSeller.com, and there's a features, and you can look under there, and it shows you examples of it, and there's a video too. But as I look at it, I mean, this literally pops up in the screen. And its sell price, you put in your buy cost, right? I mean, me as the buyer, right? If I'm thinking about this product, and I sit there and I pop in this example, it's a number 16 in toys and games, right? You tell me it's a top 1%, so you're doing that math behind the scenes, I guess?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
And I would have to then put in my sell price and buy cost, or does it automatically, can you click on the box, does it automatically go to the buy box?
Yeah, so everything's automatic except that buy cost input field. Yeah,
okay.
So it gives you a net proceeds estimate. So it goes ahead and takes the fees out of the current Amazon price. So it gives you net proceeds. And then if you don't want to type it in, you don't have to. If you know, for example, you're buying it for $20 and net proceeds are $30, you know you're profiting $10. But if you go ahead and put that buy cost in, it adds a couple of data points, ROI and margin, below it. So it goes ahead and automatically calculates that. So the only thing you have to do is enter a buy cost if you want to, and you get ROI, margin, net profit estimates all right there.
Yeah, it gives you a little bit more than that. I mean, it's giving me the weight. It's giving me the dimensions, the product dimensions, which if you're MFing, these all mean something and they're important. And, you know, the other cool thing is that if you're selling on eBay, this data is very good because you can transfer it over to eBay, just as a side note, right, which is very helpful. So that's another tool. Because when you lose money on eBay for shipping, it sucks. It just sucks because you're paying it, right? But here, it's giving me the price. It's giving me the referral fee, the pick and pack fee, the other handling, the weight handling, the 30-day storage, which you're assuming that it doesn't, you know, doesn't sell. Other must be another flat fee. Your buy cost, and then inbound shipping, which is very cool. And that inbound shipping is based on the weight, and I imagine you use some average. But as you say, then it gives you the profit margin and the ROI.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it's giving me rank and what percentage that top 1%. Now, I think I asked that question. I don't know if you said it. you're telling me that it's a top 1%?
Yeah, so we have estimated how many products are in each category, and we use a variety of data points to try to get an estimate of the number of products in each category, which you know, it's not an exact science for total number of products, but when you're dealing with looking at the top 1% of a category, we get pretty close, I would say. But we basically take the current sales rank that's on the page that you see there in the extension and divide that by the number of products, and that gives you your percentage. And so then we're just telling you it's in the top 1%, top 2%, et cetera.
It's just so important that this information is right here. Now, you have a variation viewer. Talk about that.
Yeah, so it's interesting that my wife and I, the very first part of the project for Restler was that extension you see at the top of the page. It gives you all that stuff that you just told us about. Really nice, really helpful. But honestly, the favorite feature of probably 90% of our users is the variation viewer.
Yep.
And so if you're on a product that has variations, child ASINs, so if it's a shoe, if it's an article of clothing that has sizes and colors, oftentimes you cannot see the prices for all of those sizes or colors, or you can't see how many offers there are for that particular size and color combination. So all you have to do is click the variation viewer button, and it goes to work collecting the data from the Amazon API. And it starts showing you, okay, size 6 and a red color has 10 offers, and the price for that is $9.99. And then it says size 7 has 9 offers, but the price for that one is $29.99. So you can see right there that there's a chance to make a profit on that size 7 versus size 6. And so that's basically how it works.
And you know, there's a shoe that I sell with a couple other sellers, and we're exclusive on it. There are 173 variations. Now, I'm not exaggerating.
Right.
I mean, it's 173 variations. And so, and I know there are more, there are some with even more than that. I know
we've seen 1,200, but yeah, that's a lot. 1,200? That's the most I've ever seen, yeah, but 170 is still a lot, yeah.
Was it in shoes?
Yeah, it was a shoe. But they were mostly all dead, old variations that weren't active anymore.
And so shoes and clothing, are they the majority that have the variations, would you say?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there are some products like in health and beauty or toys that will have some variations, depending on how the listing was created in Amazon. So like there might be a beauty line that's set up. It's like an Aveeno beauty line that has it's a subline of Aveeno, but then it'll show all the products on that same listing as child ASINs for that product line. But that's rare. So it's almost always in shoes and clothing.
So then you would take and narrow down the purchase price, or not the purchase price, you would narrow down the selling price based on that information of the variation, correct?
Yeah, exactly. And so the other thing it does is it shows you if there are variations that are out of stock. And that's something that we have to get from the API, but it's really helpful. It's just something where you see if it's a popular shoe that a lot of people are buying. You can tell that by the sales rank, but then there are certain sizes that are out of stock. If you go and list those sizes, there's a pretty good chance it's going to sell, and you know, you're going to be able to name your price since you don't have any competition on that variation.
Does it show you whether Amazon's selling that product or not?
So it doesn't show you on each variation line if Amazon is on it, no. But it does give you the price, and so oftentimes you can kind of get an idea based off if it's a lower price that if Amazon's on there or not.
It's the number one. I mean, when I click on it, it just blows me away when you just see that thing wrapped down there. And as you say, when you see that there's a variation that nobody's selling, you're like, okay.
Yeah.
I'll buy those.
Right.
You know? That's very cool. So what other things do you think that are interesting that you would love to add to it? I mean, have you thought about it?
Yeah, sure. There are definitely ways we can improve. Recently, we added reviews. So it's not the actual review itself. It's a count of the reviews for each variation. And we limit it to the last year or 300 reviews at this moment, whichever is greater. But the reason for that is you can kind of get an estimate based off number of reviews, how often that variation sells versus the next variation below it. So that's helpful data. And we've noticed that there are always small little things we can do to keep making it better. But there are some other things we want to do, like we want to get it into .co.uk. I've had interest, many people asking me to do that, and I apologize if anyone's listening that's requested that, and I haven't gotten it done yet. There are a couple of technical reasons in the background, but we're definitely working on that, and we'll have it soon, I hope.
You have to learn the English language their way.
Right?
It's just interesting to me, but like you're saying with reviews, because you're saying all things being equal, this variation,
yeah.
if they have 10 reviews, that they're relative to the number of sales that were made. And if this only has 2, that's generally relative to the number of sales, right? I mean, because otherwise they're all things being equal. And that's a reasonable I mean, it's a reasonable way. I mean, I don't know of another way.
It's one extra data point that you can use to help make a better decision. And that's really all RevSeller is. It's nothing definitive, but it's pretty close to accurate on almost everything we do. But the point is you need more data and you need it as close to accurate as possible. And that's what we do. So it's just another data point to say this variation might be selling faster than the next one below it.
And I tell people, you know, this is my line, is that everybody else is using these tools. You mm-hmm. need to learn how to use them. Force yourself to learn because you're going to see an improvement in your business because you're going to be more efficient. You're immediately going to have access to the data. As I said, you could use this for calculating your eBay shipping costs because it's going to help you get better information about products if you're going to do, you know, multi-channel or if you're going to MF it, which
sure.
I think is a very smart business model, by the way. I really, really applaud you because that little bit of time that guy comes in and services your account,
mm-hmm.
you have a B plan. You always mm-hmm. have a B plan. You could scale
right.
that up very quickly, very efficiently. You're not going to get throttled by eBay because you already have an established account. You've been selling long enough and all those things. And the way you're handling it, it's just like bringing in a packer to do your your FBA stuff. So I assume he does some of that too. So I just think that's such a smart business model to fill that time in, to have that risk-averse side of you covered.
For sure.
I think
it's
very cool. Yeah. Okay, so it's $99 a year. That's it.
That's right. That's right.
And so you said, hey, Steve, if your listeners would sign up, you'll give me the lowest price. It's $20 off the first year, and they use the code Momentum20. This is the cheapest you can buy it. It's out for year one, $20 off, and that's it. So you're not going to hit them with another fee every month or any of that kind of jazz. That's it, one fee.
Yeah, that's it. And when we first rolled out the product in January, it was $99. We haven't raised the price since then, but we've added a ton of features. And so we're going to keep adding more features and making it better. So you're not going to have to pay extra money for features. That's kind of in the plans right now, that we won't have a higher level extension, et cetera. It's all going to be included in what you're buying right now. So it's normally $99, but for users, for listeners, they'll get it for $20 off for the first year. And then they don't have a monthly fee to worry about, right? It's just a one-time decision. Do it, and hopefully it'll just work well for you over the next year.
Well, and there are two things, a couple things that you do differently than most everybody else who has an extension. First off, you're saying, hey, make sure you have a pro selling plan with Amazon, right? You need
mm-hmm.
that. That's how this works, right?
Yeah, so we felt like to provide the best user experience possible and to really do everything we can on the Amazon product detail page, the best we can, we needed to try and set up this API access. And so each seller has Amazon API access. If you have a professional selling plan, if you have an individual selling plan, you don't. But if you have a professional selling plan, you get that access for free from Amazon. And then you just do a setup with us. We're the developer, and it's 2 minutes to set it up. You just copy and paste a couple of numbers back and forth. And once it's in there, you don't have to enter it again in the RevSeller, and it just works.
The other thing that you do, which is very cool, again, clarity. I think that's what I'm taking away from this, is everything's spelled out here, and I love this, is you say, Steve, if your wife was working with you on there, you can use this for your second device. It's the same seller account, right? So she has access to the seller account. So that's a very reasonable. A lot of people would charge extra, and I applaud you because, you know, you want my business. You want to make it easy. And the other thing is my VA could use it as long as they have access to my account.
Right. Yeah. So basically the way it works is if you log into RevSeller and you've already done the MWS setup, anyone else that logs into your same RevSeller account can use RevSeller on their Amazon product page. But the key is we ask that it's for the same selling account.
Mm-hmm.
So if your VA is working for your selling account, then that's great. Yeah. They can log into RevSeller.com on their computer. And then when they go to an Amazon product page, if they've installed the extension, it'll show up there for them as well.
And it doesn't go back in the back system of my Amazon account. My VA can't get in through the back way
right.
through yours,
nope.
right?
Okay. Nope. We don't show any credentials or anything like that within the RevSeller account area. So no one can ever see that.
Okay.
But they just get access to it. It all runs through our server, so they actually can't ever see that.
Dude, I'm so excited because you're doing exactly what you should do. You're making it easy for me to do business with you. I mean, for $99, you're giving it to me, and you're saying, go ahead, I want you to grow your business. To me, that's the way it should be, and I applaud you for it. And to get $20 off, I'm very thankful to you. I really mean that. And there's no cheaper price he set out there, so please consider it. Momentum20 is the code, and I'll have a link right on the website. Okay, so we've gone through that whole thing. I love I love a few takeaways I'm taking already is that, you know, the way you've diversified your business, the way you've spread it out, you could ride one up, down. I don't know, if rev sellers slow down, you could ramp up eBay, or you could ramp up your FBA business, or vice versa. As rev seller takes off, it's not going to slow down. You can scale back on these others. But I love the eBay portion because you have somebody else doing the work. So you've outsourced the work. You could scale it
right
up if he wants to or whoever. I just think it's such a smart way to run a business, and I applaud you for it. What would you say for people who are stuck? Now, you got past the point of stuck. I mean, even when you were selling at 50,000, a lot of people don't hit that because they have their limits. I don't know if they're self-imposed or they hit these walls. Give me something that you think people can use to help them get past that point of stuck.
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's something that maybe we sometimes do intuitively, but then sometimes we just don't do it for whatever reason. But something that's kind of been on my mind a lot lately is focusing on building systems over setting goals. I was always a real, you know, goal-oriented person. Begin with the end of mind. Stephen Covey, you know, he put that in my mind, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. He's like, begin with the end of mind. So I've got to set goals. And I was like, that's good. That's great. But like, I end up focusing too much on the goal instead of just, hey, create the system, automate the system. If you have something that's working, then just automate that part. And if it's not automated, just figure out how to do it more efficiently and build that. And then you have time to then do whatever else or focus on something else or make a better decision and get out of the first thing completely, whatever it is. But systems are much more important than goals.
Oh, my God. It's so good. Both of those make a better decision. You know, I use I recently wrote a blog post where I basically said, you know, intuitively, you should go fix what's wrong in your business and you're going to get a great return, right?
Mm-hmm.
Actually, if you go and double, triple, quadruple the effort of what's really working, you're going to have a much better result.
Absolutely.
I mean, you're just going to see it. And like you said, once you get to a certain level, then you can go back and fix whatever with process. And so I think it's really smart. Okay, so if somebody wanted to get in touch with you, they have questions or whatever, what's the best way?
Yeah, revseller.com. There's a contact us there, or support@revseller.com. Those are the two easiest ways to reach me.
Support it, okay.
Support@revseller.com, right.
And I'll have all this linked on the website.
Okay.
Dude, it's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm thankful we finally were able to pull this
Same
off.
Here. Same
both
here.
Both of us are well enough. We're both healthy enough. We like to stay healthy. I wish you nothing but success. Can't wait to see you again. And I'm so thankful again that you did that for my listeners. I really mean that. I really appreciate that.
Thank you
so much. You have a great night.
You too. Thanks.
Take care.
Bye.
I'm so excited to bring you another Andy Slammons project. This one's called The List. That's it. That's the name, The List. It's a premium inventory sourcing service from a group of $4 million plus sellers. These are real sellers. They provide you with actionable inventory that they find personally. They also do it real time. This is high quality stuff. These lists are vetted to make sure that you can make money and spend less time sourcing. There's a hard cap of 100 members. They have a few openings, so you've got to sign up right away. It's called thelistishere.com. Thelistishere.com. You got to tell Andy I sent you. Thelistishere.com. Well, not my best recording skills, but I think the content was excellent. And I mean, this is a smart seller, just a smart guy. And I love his product. I've been using it for a long time. Just an amazing product. 20% or $20 off. I mean, think about that. Cheapest price he's selling it for right now. Momentum20 is the code you got to use. There's a link on the website, on my website for RevSeller. And just put that code in. You get $20 off year one. That's a sweet deal. It's only $99 for the whole year. Hope you enjoyed this. Sorry again about the the editing skills. But good news is I have a new Mac on the way, and I'm going to convert from a PC world into the Mac world finally. And so hopefully we'll see a little better quality. ecommercemomentum.com, got lots of stuff out there, including some blog posts, and I don't promote them anywhere unless you're a subscriber to my newsletter and you get it one email a week from me and it mentions what I blog about. And I hope you enjoy that. ecommercemomentum.com. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.